White Rocket Entertainment.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by the book tour for Ken Ringer's Lorindo. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, here we are on Halloween night, but Saturday night, Vaught Hemingway was a house of horrors for the Ole Miss Rebels as Auburn won our fifth straight game, 40-29, over one of the teams that people said from the very beginning of the season we would lose to. How are you feeling about that game right now?
I'm feeling really good about it. I mean, you could see, you know, from a couple of games ago, this was the toughest game left on our schedule before the Alabama game. Yep. And the game I was most worried about.
Yes.
And to go in there and get a win, you know, and play, you know, and face some adversity, but play really well and come out with a win on the other side, I'm happy with it.
Definitely.
I don't think there's any other way you can be. Winning on the road in the SEC is hard. And you like to make fun of Ole Miss as the best five-loss team in the country.
I do. I admit.
But the reality is, they are. I mean, if you took every other team that had three losses or more and put them in a tournament, Ole Miss would win. And I don't think it would be very close.
I agree.
That's part of life in the SEC West. Is that, you know, really good teams are going to have a bunch of losses, and I don't think they're terrible. I think they're pretty dangerous. So
you know what Ole Miss says at the end of their games?
What?
Please clap.
You are so happy to have the soundboard back operational.
Well, I sort of have the soundboard back. I have the makeshift iPad soundboard back because
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
And my actual soundboard is not walking through that door, but the iPad is, and so I have a backup iPad. In fact, I'm going to step away for 1 second and fix something. This should be pretty entertaining for our listeners, but give us your quick, like, 2 minute breakdown of Auburn right now after what you saw on Saturday, and I'll be right back.
Okay, I'm not going to talk about the Ole Miss game. You asked me to talk about Auburn as a whole right now, and I think it's obvious the team has come a long way. They've improved dramatically since, you know, the Texas A&M game and since Gus handed over the reins to Rhett Lashley. And the biggest thing is I think the offense is finding itself. They're finding what works. They eliminated the bad plays. They're kind of rolling out the good, new, tricky stuff. I think they're adjusting quickly to what the opponent does. And I think they have a lot of confidence in themselves and in Sean White. And I think defensively, you know, the team just fought, you know, they had their worst outing, but they got better in the second half. And I feel really good about them going forward. The good thing for Auburn is, you know, we haven't, you know, knock on wood, everybody, we haven't had a lot of major injuries. We had a couple players banged up in that game. At one point, Trey Williams got helped off. And so that's been a big, you know, a big factor in one of the reasons we're doing well is that we've avoided that. But I think the biggest thing is the team has kind of discovered who they are, and they have belief in themselves, a confidence in themselves and what the coaches are doing. And I think the individual position coaches as Van's banging around in the background taping stuff or something.
I am. I'm taping stuff.
Exactly. we can tell you're taping something. I want to take a minute and recognize the individual position coaches, because I think we talk a lot about the coordinators and all that stuff. But just a minute, I wanted to run through some of these guys. Like, Herb Hand has done a great job this season. Like, I was really genuinely worried, like, after the A&M game about him and the offensive line. But
right,
he's turned that around, and they're, you know, a team strength now. Their running game, their run blocking by the offensive line is much better. It's really good. All right?
How funny is it that we were seriously worried about, like, that we had hired a dud and the offensive line was going to be terrible? How funny is that now?
It is funny now, but at the time, I think it was real fear. But it just goes to show, like, he had good raw material and he's a good coach and he got it under control. And they also kind of figured out the play calling stuff that was holding them down. Also, like, Tim Horton, the running back coach, deserves a tremendous amount of credit, because let's review. You know, what was the depth chart in December for this team? You know, coming into January, right. Okay? Right. You know, Rock Thomas. our man from Memphis is no longer on the team.
Javon, yeah.
Javon Robinson, who I thought was going to be the man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Carry On. Cameron Petway. Truitt, who was playing wide receiver, and a freshman from Baylor. Yeah. So he's taken, you know, Petway in the spring transition from fullback. I think we heard a lot of good stuff about that, and you were big on the Petway bandwagon, but you have to give Horton a lot of credit, because everywhere he goes, the running backs are excellent. And they're really good at their job. And you look at, like, they block well. They catch passes out of the backfield. They do the little things, and they're ready to play. And Petway has gotten better and better. And I didn't think he could be this good. I'm going to be honest. And he's better than I thought. And I have to go back and eat some crow for another running back that was on this team last year, Peyton Barber, who I kind of poo-pooed a little bit, and who's now starting in the NFL and had a great game two weeks ago.
How about that? Yeah, how about that?
So Tim Horton's done a great job. We talked a lot about, you know, the two new coaches, you know, Cody and Travis Williams. But I think I wanted to mention those other guys because I think they've really done an excellent job this year.
Yeah.
All right. So the Ole Miss game, you said something on Friday, like, that you were nervous because you thought Auburn was going to win and you weren't worried enough or whatever. Do you think Auburn fans, not the team, do you think Auburn fans took Ole Miss too lightly or too overconfident?
I'm rearranging a couple of things. That's my fault. I had a couple of points I wanted to make before, but
okay. Keep going.
No, you brought that up. That's a good point. Yeah, it can be summarized thusly. The day or two before the game, and by the way, I just tweeted a photo of the repair I just made using Scotch tape. So people seeing the tweet don't know we're recording the show, and when people hear the show, the tweet will have gone by the day before, but, you know, maybe people can put two and two together and see what I just did, but it's pretty pitiful. But it works, I guess. There was a pair of tweets before the game, like Friday, and both from guys, actually I think one was a tweet and one was on the air, from two of my absolute favorite pros in the business, right? Barrett Salee and Brandon Marcello. I mean, if I had to pick two guys, right, to be in my sports discussion foxhole with me, and God help them if they're in there depending on me, but those would be my two guys. I love those two guys very much. as Auburn first kind of, you know, reporters. And they each had a completely different take, and I thought it was fascinating, and it summed up the argument, well, not the argument, but the sort of thought processes that were going on, certainly in my head and probably in a lot of Auburn fans' heads, okay? Because Barrett Salee was saying, Auburn can run the ball, Ole Miss cannot stop the run. Ole Miss can't run the ball anyway, and Auburn can stop the run. Our strength, Auburn's strengths dominate Ole Miss's weaknesses, and his quote was, Auburn will roll. In fact, they may not have been tweets. I think they were both on their separate shows. He said, Auburn will roll. Okay. Brandon Marcello said he thought it was going to be a back-and-forth thing, and it was a coin flip as to who would win. Now, you tell me which one of them ended up... I mean, in a way, they were both right, but when it came down to the
score... I think they were both right.
But when it came down to the score, though, I think what Barrett didn't anticipate was just how successful Ole Miss would do passing the ball even without a running game. Right? I mean,
yes.
To me, that was the difference in the game. We would have obliterated them the way we did Arkansas and Mississippi State, except for one thing, which was that Ole Miss does not need any semblance of a running game to make their passing game work. I mean, sure, you know, their quarterback can take off running for 10 or 15 yards in a pinch here and there. You don't want him doing that too much, just like Sean, except he's a little better at running than Sean. I think he's a bigger, stronger guy than Sean. But other than that, they had... I mean, how many rushing yards did they have? Let me see. Let me move Skype out of the way. They had...
I'll tell you. Keep going.
21. I'm looking at it right now. They had a total of 21 rushing yards. And the funny thing is, Kelly, his long run was 21. So when you add all their running together and take away their sacks and everything, their total... Oh, I'm sorry. No, they had 105.
Yeah, 105.
105. I was looking at the long, right. Yeah, 31 carries. I couldn't believe they ran the ball 31 times. Wow. But yeah, they had 31 carries for 105 yards, 3.4 average. So we definitely did stop their run, but their passing game, didn't they set like an Ole Miss record or an SEC record or something passing on us? Talk about in a losing effort, man. 36 for 59, 465 yards. 7.9 average, 3 touchdowns, an interception. Boy, that was a big interception. But anyway, so, yeah, seeing those two tweets, I kept thinking and thinking and thinking, and listening to, I mean, not those two tweets, hearing those two shows, and then hearing Barrett say that, I got thinking, you know, when everybody is saying we're going to blow doors, that's when I start getting nervous, because it just never quite works that way, right? And sure enough, it ended up, the game itself ended up playing out just exactly like Brandon said it would. And so I was saying before the game that I was starting to get nervous just because everybody seemed so confident. It just seems like when everybody is on board that you're going to blow doors, that's when it never quite works out that way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So how did you feel going into the game? Which side were you on about that?
I mean, I felt like Auburn was going to win. I knew they couldn't stop us, but I also felt like, you know, they have an excellent quarterback and excellent receivers, and I knew it wasn't going to be like the Mississippi State Arkansas games for us. I mean, they had played two games on the road at Arkansas and at LSU and hadn't played great either one of them, but they were away from home. And they were coming home, and at home is where they blew Georgia out of the stadium, and they kind of played toe-to-toe with Alabama for most of that game. So I knew they were kind of their backs against the wall, desperate.
Yeah.
And I knew that, you know, I went back and looked Friday night, I guess, and going into that game, they had the fifth most efficient offense in the country. So the only team way far ahead in the SEC, the only teams that were ahead of them were like Louisville and Oklahoma and Washington and Texas Tech or something.
Yeah.
So I knew and it made sense when you think about it. Like they had some offensive line injuries. They weren't going to be able to block us. Their normal thing they like to do is a lot of the deep passes and stuff. And like you see when they play Alabama, that's kind of their game plan is the mad bomber kind of thing. where they throw it downfield. But that wouldn't work against us because if they tried to do that, then Kelly would leave the stadium in an ambulance. So they were good. It made sense. They were going to try to throw it short because they couldn't block us for very long and try to do a bunch of very quick stuff. But he and those receivers are so good, they could make it work. And and the other part is, like, he really came out on fire. I mean, he was really, really, really throwing the ball in some very tight spaces. And I want to say that, you know, I think people look at that first half and go, oh, my gosh, we're terrible. We can't stop anybody throwing the ball. Well, guess what? Unless you play, you know, Louisville or Oklahoma maybe, I'm not worried about it because nobody else – Eason for Georgia ain't putting the ball within 10 feet of those holes that Kelly was throwing it into the other night.
No.
I mean, if Eason for Georgia tried that same game plan against us with their receivers, him at quarterback, we'd have like 10 interceptions and 10 sacks. So it was his decision making and his quick release and his accuracy where he was doing some NFL kind of throws at times. You could see on some of those replays where Auburn have defenders crossing in front of the ball and stuff, and he fit the ball into some very tight windows. And when you play defensive back, what's the one thing you're worried about? The number one thing you're scared of is like the guy running by you and then throwing it over your head and it being a touchdown. So all the time you're worried about, I don't want the guy to get past me. You know, I don't want the guy to get behind me and score. Exactly. And so when you think that way and then the guy runs and stops and the ball is already there, then the quarterback and the receiver have that kind of timing where the receiver doesn't even stop and the ball's already 90% of the way there and then he stops and the ball's there. That's very tough to stop. And in the second half, Auburn made the adjustments to stop it.
They really did. In fact, did you see, just looking at the box score, how many touchdowns did Ole Miss score after the first quarter?
Well, I know they scored one in the second half.
Yep, that's it, one.
See, that's great defense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Auburn gave up a whole bunch of yards, and that's you know, you can worry about that all you want, but the reality is we only gave up one touchdown the rest of the game to that team in their stadium. That was a really, really good defense.
We scored 30 points after the first quarter, and they only scored one touchdown after the first quarter. And, I mean, the fourth quarter was 13-0 Auburn, and, of course, that interception had a lot to do with it. I said on Twitter that was it Holsey? Yeah, that's Holsey. Holsey's interception. I said that would have been the Pontiac game-changing play of the game if they still made Pontiacs.
Well, but it was kind of like two great tennis players who are just like serving on each other and racking up the points that way. And somebody has to break serve.
Yeah.
And Auburn broke serve by getting the interception, and that was really what kind of turned the game around.
It reminded me of the Auburn Georgia game in 2010 when we were going back and forth with Georgia. Mm-hmm. And remember when Rick finally settled for a field goal and everybody just was like, up, you know, this was a, this was a tennis match and you just let yourself break serve by kicking a field goal. You know, you're going to miss those 4 points. And sure enough, you know, we ended up pulling away. Yeah. So it was the same thing is every time one of the teams wouldn't score, you had to feel like, oh, that could be the difference right there. Like there was a, you know, we had to settle for a field goal before they did. They missed an extra point, but it was 13-7, and then we kicked a field goal to make it 13-10 in the first quarter. And at the end of the first quarter, and I was thinking, oh boy, you know, we're gonna at least they missed the extra point, so we're still within a field goal of tying them. Because I'm thinking having to settle for a field goal there. Really hurt. But then they had to settle for 3 field goals in the second quarter. So,
there's a guy, Mike Lombardi, was like an NFL general manager, and he's like a talking head on Fox now, and he's on Bill Simmons' podcast. And he said something a couple months ago that really made sense to me. He said, when a team is in the red zone and they have the ball and it's third down, that is basically a 4-point play because if you get a first down, you get a touchdown, it's 7 points. But if you don't, you got to kick the field goal and it's 3 points. So that third down play in the red zone is worth 4 points basically. And we Auburn is the best team in the country at stopping teams there.
That's
we are
amazing.
The number one team in the country at preventing the other teams from getting touchdowns once they get into the red zone, forcing them into field goals or not scoring at all. And that is amazing.
It wasn't that long ago that we were like the worst team in the country at actually scoring touchdowns ourselves in that situation.
Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to ask you about that. Like, what did you think when they ran that trick play and threw it to Jalen Harris?
Oh, that was awesome. I went back and ran it again, rewound it, and I walked through it with my wife to kind of explain what was going on. And I love that he was so excited. He said he hadn't caught a pass since high school, and he couldn't remember, I guess, the last time he caught a touchdown. So I just can't believe he caught it. In that situation, when you haven't caught a pass since high school, what are the odds the first zippy pass in a wide open, you know, space like that comes to you and you just blow it? So I was just totally amazed that he actually managed to hang on to the ball. I mean, if he'd had to work for it a little harder, I think he would have had an easier chance catching it. But he was so wide open, I could just see it just going right between his hands, you know?
But I think did you read the story? Like, they've been practicing that play every week. Oh. Auburn has been practicing that play every single week, waiting for the right opportunity to pull it out and use it. And they pulled it out. And he said they were all like, what? We're calling it? You know? And that's the first play we've had a catch by a tight end since Uzama left.
Yeah. Well, and it had a funny name, too, didn't it? What was it? It was like
Fight Song.
Fight Song.
Because – so Gus calls it that because every time you run that play, they score and they got to play the fight song.
That's good. So, I like it.
But it was a great trick because they started to show like that single wing thing, right. And then they shifted out of it. But yep. Then they had like the offensive tackle out there, and he was lined up at tackle. But the other part is just even without that, he's blocked every play this year. We haven't thrown him the ball. So even without the, you know, the kind of the window dressing tricking stuff, I don't think other teams are going to would have been bothering to cover him.
Well, and he was so, lined up at tackle too. So there's kind of
that,
a reason.
In that case, they're never going to. But I think on a regular basis, I think teams are so used to him being the blocker that I think teams have started to ignore him. And I think we need to make teams pay for that. And I think it's just one more thing we can do. Yeah, one more little weapon they've got in there that when we really need it, and I think in the red zone it can be an asset.
That was amazing. That was one of the highlight plays I think of the year. It was. I mean, I do have it. Here's what it reminded me of. Oh, we haven't heard that one in a while.
So is Jalen Harris going to be the helicopter guy?
I guess he will until further notice. A couple other things that I did want to mention, and we'll get into breaking down some more stuff about it. Did you see who now has a Heisman Trophy campaign?
Who?
Cameron Petway. Auburn is officially promoting Cameron Petway for the Heisman now.
I don't think he's going to get the Heisman, no. But I it's absolutely fair. I mean, he's leading the SEC in rushing. He's having a great season. And the best part, did you see his interview after the game?
Yes, yeah.
They asked him, like, he was talking about, well, I started to pick up tendencies. And she says, what tendencies did you pick up on? He goes, well, none of them wanted to tackle me.
And she said something like, why do you think that is? He goes, what do you say? Something like, because I'm so big or because they're scared of something. He had a funny response to that, too. But, yeah, I mean, think about this. He's leading the SEC in rushing. He's right on the doorstep already of a 1,000-yard season. And I think he's got like 940 or something like that, 950. And he only played in six games. He didn't play in one game just because we didn't use him. I mean, that's the – and the other one, he was, you know, nursing an injury. But, I mean, the thing that's so funny is here's a guy we're talking about for the Heisman that's already got almost 1,000 yards, eight games into the season, and he didn't play in the first game just because he wasn't far enough up the depth chart 8 weeks ago. That's crazy. But, of course, Trey Mason didn't, you know, you remember how the 13 went.
That's true.
He was not the leading rusher until at least game three, right?
That's right.
I think that remember we decided Corey Grant was leading rusher in the first game and Cameron Artis Payne was leading rusher in the second game. It wasn't until game three, which may have been LSU. Doug Mason really took off. So there you go. The other thing that I wanted to ask you about while we're talking about Halloween and everything, have you seen that we got a commitment from a certain linebacker?
Yes, I saw the video. That was funny.
Yes. KJ Britt, who, I mean, this is a guy that not only did Georgia and Florida want and been trying to get hard, but Stanford wanted him because he's a good student, a smart kid. And you got to go and see his video. Basically, he's coming to the door for trick or treat, and a kid in a gator costume and a kid in a bulldog costume come to, and he gives them little tiny bits of candy, and then I'll let you find out what happens at the end. But this was funny. Auburn Elvis tweeted that the kid in the bulldog costume should have been taking off an elephant costume when he opened the door. I thought that was pretty good. So, yeah. So, I mean, I like it. I like that he did this whole full-blown, like, music video movie production with, I believe he did it with Bleacher Report. Yeah.
Yeah. And I could tell you that one of their analysts, a guy named Michael Felder, who does a lot of recruiting analysis of stuff, was saying this guy is like a classic middle linebacker, like, you know, stand in the hole and stop the running back and stuff him kind of guy. He's going to be a great fit at Auburn.
Well, and they were saying he's so smart. He's like the quarterback on the defense. He runs everything. He organizes everything. So looks really good. And I mean, you got to think that any players that have been kind of holding back, they were thinking about committing to Auburn, but they're like, oh, if they're about to fire the coach, you know, and they're 1-2, you got to feel like recruiting is going to pick up a little bit now that we're going out kicking butt so much.
Mm-hmm. And the players are having fun, and the young assistant coach is doing a great job. I think recruiting is going to take off. So,
yeah.
I want to talk about a couple of the other things in this game. We went back. I mean, after having to not have throw the ball last week, Sean White was excellent in this game.
Yep.
Really accurate, really made good decisions. And that one long run he had up the middle, kind of scramble for first down, was one of the biggest plays of the game. Maybe one of the biggest plays of the season. That was a huge play where he ran like 13 yards to the first down.
He's having some scrambling success, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. And I think, honestly, like, there were a couple plays where, you know, Petway was, you know, killing him, and he was doing handed to Petway. And I think there was a couple times where if Sean had kept it, he could have run for 60 yards, because everybody in the Ole Miss defense was diving at Petway the minute he started to even move the ball in Petway's direction. So I think that's something else down the road that he's going to do again with big success when Petway gets rolling, is that – you know, but I think they're probably worried about him taking hits and stuff. But it was definitely there if we got to have some yards.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to say is that I, the defense, you know, the Holsey interception was huge. It was a gigantic turning point in the game. We've already talked about that. But there was a couple other ones. There was a big red zone stop where they went for it on the series before the interception, I think, or one or two before the interception. They drove down the field and got in about the 10-yard line, and they went for it on fourth down. And I think on third down, Trey Williams tipped the ball away on a pass in the end zone. And on fourth down, Devereaux Lawrence and Dontavious Russell blew the play up, and Devereaux Lawrence tackled Kelly in the backfield. And there was one other big defensive play that
I'm not sure.
Well, the blocked extra point was the other one I wanted to say.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Who got that? Who blocked it?
Martavius.
It was
Martavius.
Montravius, okay.
Montravius, yeah.
Adams, yeah. Okay.
So that was the other huge play I wanted to mention. And so I think the defense had a bad first half, and they adjusted, they made changes at halftime, which is, again, when you see teams improve over the season and you see teams adjust during the game and take away what the opponent is doing, that's a sign of good coaching. And you saw that in that game.
Right. Right.
You had some comments about the officiating in this game.
Oh, Lord. I documented it. We had to go and do something. Oh, I know. Amy had to go do something, and she wanted to see the game really bad. So I said, well, I'll just, you know, I'm recording it. We can start watching it when you get home. And so because we were catching up and I was fast-forwarding through commercials and stuff, I didn't mind rewinding a little bit because we were behind anyway. And so when they started spotting the ball, good Lord, anywhere from 1 to 2 yards beyond where the Ole Miss player ever remotely got to, I said, I got to go back and document this because I saw it happen that one, the first time it happened, I said, I'm going to take a picture of that because I'm sure this will be the only time it happens in the game, but it's crazy. So I rewound back. I took a picture of the farthest. I played it and paused it a couple of times until I had it exactly the farthest the guy ever got, right, as he's being tackled. And I took a picture, and then I played it. I let it run until the referee spotted it. And as the game went along, I caught two more for a total of three times where, let's just take like the 25, let's say. The player would catch it on the Ole Miss. The Ole Miss player would catch it on the Ole Miss 25, and they would and be tackled right there, and they would spot it at like the 26.5 or 27-yard line. I've never seen anything like it. Three times that happened. Did you see that?
I could, but I wasn't at my house watching. I was somewhere else, and the resolution wasn't as great.
Oh, okay.
So I had a harder time seeing that kind of thing. But
for those that don't know, on Saturday afternoon or evening, I tweeted three sets of pictures. Each one is like a before and after. The first picture, I promise you, it's as far as the guy got. I wanted to make sure nobody could say, oh, you paused it before he was done, right? So I played it as far as he got and paused it instantly. And it's a good 1 to 2 yards further down the field every time. So you can look at the evidence.
I mean, that was bad. And I also thought the officials adopted a very much let them play kind of attitude.
Yes.
In this game.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of holding of Auburn's defensive line in this game.
There were a lot of
plays when Auburn defensive linemen were being, you know, held from behind or the side, coming through the hole. And it was, you know, I think there was a lot of kind of pushing back and forth with the receivers and the defensive backs on both sides. But I thought their holding of our offensive line was really, really egregious.
We've talked about Cameron Petway. I want to know, because I had some thoughts about this, how did you evaluate Carry on my wayward son?
I'm glad he's back. I'm very happy he's back. I think he adds a real element. Especially like when he did the Wildcat and scored the touchdown.
Yes, but that's his specialty now.
It is, and they had the big wheel route catch.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think he's 100%. No. You know, I mean, watching him play, I think he's about 80, 85%. Yeah. There was that one – he didn't run with the same physicality like you saw in the LSU game.
Right.
It wasn't there. So
he did have –
and so that was the evidence to me.
Yeah. Well, he did have an interesting point, though, after the game. They asked him about that, and he basically said, well – he said, at this point in the season, who is 100%, you know?
It's true.
Which is a valid point. But for him, it's a particularly nagging injury because it takes away one of the things he's really good at. Yeah, like you say, in the LSU game and then maybe the beginning of the next game, he was doing that high-stepping, charging, running style, you know, that was really getting him some success. And he's not – he just kind of was diving into the line. He wasn't doing a lot of outside cutting either. He was just kind of – he was trying to run more like Petway, it seemed like, than he was. And like I thought this was interesting that Cam Martin and Stanton Truitt barely got any carries in that game.
Truitt got some carries.
Truitt got like three, and he had one good one and two not so good. Yeah, he had 3 for 13, but one was 11. Martin didn't carry the ball at all. Eli Stove only got one carry, and it was a 2-yard loss. So there went the rise and fall of the jet sweep. Easy come, easy go.
All right, on the play where we fumbled, where Truitt was coming across.
Oh, good Lord.
Did you think they were trying to snap it to him?
Who could tell? Do you know what it reminded me of the other time we did that? Do you remember what? Here's a little quiz for you guys, because I remember this clearly. What was the other game when we did that?
It was Georgia, wasn't it?
It was Georgia 2013.
Yeah.
All season we kept saying, you know, one of these days they're going to snap it. It's going to bounce off that guy because the timing is so narrow, you know? And it bounced. I believe it was Ricardo Lewis, wasn't it? It bounced off of?
Probably.
And that was one of those things when our drive, when we had the big lead against Georgia and it evaporated, which is why we needed. It's why we needed. We wouldn't have needed the miracle if we hadn't collapsed entirely on offense in the second half, and a big part of that collapse was snapping the ball right into the jet sweep guy, who I believe, like you say, I believe it was Ricardo. So,
but I Rhett Lashley said we don't do that. That wasn't the intent of the play. But watching the replay of it. True, it turns his head towards the center.
Yeah.
So I kind of think they were snapping him the ball, and it just blew up.
It felt that way to me.
So I don't think they'll do it again.
I think they'll practice it some more if they do, but
yeah, I think they'll probably shelve that. There's not a need for it, and it's too risky.
Yeah, it's too risky. So let me see. What have we not talked about from the Ole Miss game? I like you put in the notes. The tenderizer has a huge game. The tenderizer. I gotta find some audio for that. But the tenderizer had a huge game. We didn't really need any other running backs. I don't want to wear poor Pettway to death out. Wear him to death. But man, he doesn't seem to be bothered by getting that many carries, does he?
You're worried about wearing him out. He wears the other team out.
That's the truth. Are you concerned about how easy Ole Miss was throwing the ball on us the first half? It sounded like we went from a man to a zone, and we used some cover two, is what they were saying in the second half.
Well, I mean,
kind of keep everything.
We did a couple of things.
Yeah,
but we started doing some stunts in the defensive line, which we don't ever do. Like up to this point, when we rush, we just. Yeah, we might move Lawson to a different place and have him come from a different angle.
Right.
But a lot of times our guys just go straight ahead. And we don't do a lot of this stuff you see some teams do where the defensive linemen are crisscrossing and going around each other and stuff. But because they had injuries in the offensive line and they were shuffling guys around, we did a little bit more of that in the second half. We've done it all this season, and it messed them up on several times. Like they had no idea who to block. And the other thing we did is we did play more zone. We basically sat down in the short areas and said, throw the ball there. And the other thing I would say, the linebackers have had a great season and the safeties have had a really good season, but they did not have a great first half. I mean, and a lot of the coverage things, were them in the first half. So that one touchdown in particular, they kind of faked a pitch to the right-hand side and Deshaun Davis – and one of the safeties went right for it and left the guy wide open. And
there was we did that to them later, though, which was awesome.
I know, but a couple of those, dink and dunk pass plays to the running back that ended up getting like 10 or 15 yards, those were on the, some of the linebackers. That's their coverage out there when we're in man-to-man. So they didn't have a great game. I think, the other part is, again, like what I said at the beginning – no other team that we're going to play has the quarterback and the receivers to duplicate that. So I'm not particularly worried about it. If we play whatever Oklahoma or Louisville, then they can do that to us.
Yeah.
But Alabama's not can't do that to us. So I'm not losing a lot of sleep about it. It really was, a quarterback and his receivers, who are all very talented. I think the receivers for teams like Mississippi State and Arkansas and Georgia wouldn't play at Ole Miss. Their guys are like the A&M guys. I think I'd probably take the Ole Miss guys over the A&M guys after seeing them again. I can't wait for that Ingram guy to graduate. He kills us.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about it. I don't think it's like, oh my gosh, we have a weakness now, you know, because the reality is if your game plan against us is throw the ball, you know, 5 yards down the field, great, do it. You know, so I'm saying, like, if that's your what you're going to do, because other teams will have NFL kind of quarterbacks like him, and you're going to have problems.
Well, I got to kind of lay old Mr. to rest. I got to be honest, which is, when I think about being this excited about beating Ole Miss, all I can say is,
what the hell is the world coming to?
It just doesn't seem right, does it?
No, but they're a good team. They won 10 games the last 2 years, and you know they have a lot of good players, and they're dangerous on offense. But we went up there and took care of business. So,
yeah.
I think Auburn winning on the road is hard. And we went in there and did it. So I'm happy.
Yeah. This all reminds me, I had a note here I wanted to mention. Have you seen the guy that does the videos about the SEC every week where he's an Alabama fan on the couch and he's watching all the different games and reacting to them?
No.
Oh, this guy is hilarious. Now, I don't have his name off the top of my mind. It's something like Funny Maine, M-A-I-N-E.
Okay.
I think that's it. If you Google Funny, M-A-I-N-E, or look on Twitter at Funny Maine, my wife thinks he is hilarious. He's really funny, but she can't wait to see his things every week because he does like his little he's a comedian, but he's hilarious. But he does his reactions like when Vanderbilt beat Georgia, they show him sitting there and he's like, look at you, Vandy. Look at you. Oh, aren't you guys cute? Look at you guys. You know, he just, it's just so funny how he reacts to each one. And then, like, he says something like, yeah, one of his bits, when Vanderbilt beat Georgia, he goes, next thing you know, Vandy, you're going to be in Atlanta. And then it cuts to something else, and it comes back to him and goes, you ain't going to be in Atlanta. He is really funny. She keeps telling me you got to get him on the show. So I guess at some point we'll contact him and see if he wants to. If you go check him out and tell me if you think he ought to be on the show.
If he's an Alabama guy, I don't know, but I'll look at it.
Yeah, he covers the whole conference pretty well. Speaking of Vanderbilt, let's look at Vanderbilt really quick. Do you realize 2 weeks ago, I just brought it up on this box here. 2 weeks ago, Vanderbilt played Tennessee State, and then they had a bye week this week. So they haven't played anybody in at least 2 to 3 weeks getting ready for this game. So all I can ask you, John, would you say...
It's a trap!
Is it?
They haven't played anybody all year. So I don't know why the last 2 weeks is a thing. I don't know if it's a trap because it's at home and it's a noon game.
Yeah.
So, you know, Vanderbilt at home in a noon time slot, maybe you could say that, coming off a big win and with Georgia on deck.
Yeah, 11,
I get that.
11 o'clock.
I mean, it could be a
11 o'clock game, though. Vanderbilt, Jefferson Pilot, the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's like a hex. They've
And what's our series record with Vanderbilt?
Okay. Yeah, it's not funny, John. That crap ain't funny, man. Vanderbilt owns both the overall record and the current winning streak. And you know what that is?
Oh, my God.
You know what that is, John?
And that's nothing but pure and simple old-fashioned communism.
That's what that is. That's what that is. That ain't nothing but pure old-fashioned communism, Vanderbilt, with your fancy book learning with your encyclopedias. Ooh, Vanderbilt, you smart up there in Nashville with your book learning. Bring all that book learning out of Jordan Hare. Why don't you, Vanderbilt? I'm scared. I'm so scared of Vanderbilt. Because they do, John. They have a 2-game winning streak on us, and they have the all-time record, and I am not pleased about that. I think about this factoid and it blows my mind. Florida hasn't beaten us but once in this millennium. Tennessee hasn't beaten us since 1999, and yet Vanderbilt has a two-game winning streak. But you know why Vanderbilt has a two-game winning streak on us, John? Because they've played us twice in the last how many ever years. Guess what 2 years they played us? 2008 and 2012. You know what? Maybe all that book learning's pretty good because they knew what years to schedule us, didn't they?
They worked that out pretty well for them.
Wow. If you were going to play Auburn, 2008 and 2012 are probably the years you want to put on the schedule. Good gosh. We got all we can do.
Blame yourself.
That's right.
And maybe they thought they were scheduling us in a lull this year, but unfortunately for them, that's not the case. This particular Vanderbilt team is very, very good on defense. Against SEC teams, if you look at kind of the yards per play and yards allowed per game, they are giving up basically the exact same as Alabama.
Yeah.
So for comparison, again, but I would tell you that they haven't played anybody. Like, that sounds very impressive. Here's their schedule. I want you to tell me when I get to a really good offense, okay? They lost to South Carolina. They allowed 13 points in that game. They beat Middle Tennessee State. Mm-hmm. They lost to Georgia Tech 38-7. They beat Western Kentucky 31-30. Okay.
Wow.
They have a good offense. Western Kentucky has a really good offense. They lost to Florida 13-6. They lost to Kentucky 20-13. They beat Georgia 17-16. Okay.
Man.
And they beat Tennessee State 35-17. So who on that list has a good offense?
Yeah.
Only Western Kentucky, I guess.
Wow. And that's a sad indictment when you've played some of those teams and Western Kentucky's the one you're like, ooh, they're the offense right there, boy. You know, never mind Florida and Georgia, but man, that Western Kentucky, they get after you on offense.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to disrespect Vanderbilt's defense is very, very, very good. I'll go ahead and say this. Vanderbilt's defense is better than Georgia's defense. They're better than Arkansas's defense. They're better than Mississippi State's defense. They're better than Ole Miss's defense. I don't have any problem saying that. Dang. But their offense is amazingly bad.
Hey, they got a couple of good running backs now.
Their offense is like 2012 Auburn bad.
Wow.
Okay? Wow. Like way below Louisiana Monroe in some rankings I've seen.
I'm looking at their box score from 2 weeks ago. Kerry Blasingame, 14 carries for 100 yards, 7.1 average and 3 touchdowns. Ralph Webb, 9 carries for $125, 13.9 average and a receive and one catch for 15 yards.
And Webb's a solid back and they have offensively they're not good. So I think Auburn's offense is going to face a tough challenge against their defense, but I think our defense against their offense is a complete mismatch, and I think Vanderbilt will be lucky if they break 10 points.
Wow. All right.
I mean, they're averaging 3.89 yards per play, just like in SEC games, and that's the worst in the conference by a good bit. I mean, for comparison purposes, like Alabama's averaging like 7 – Auburn and A&M, everybody about 6.5, 6.3, 6.4 in that range. So Vanderbilt's averaging, you know, 3.8.
Wow.
So it's they're really bad on offense.
I need to get the Jefferson Pilot old theme music because I just need that as a warning. But I still feel like
it's a trap.
I don't have any problems. I mean, they get a lot of tackles for loss. Zach Cunningham is one of the best linebackers in the conference. And he's from Alabama, so this is like his Super Bowl. I'm sure he's going to make a million plays in this game. But we just need to go in there and not give it away, you know, not turn the ball over and stuff, come out and execute on offense and defense. And I really feel like our defense ought to be able to keep them from scoring, and our offense ought to be able to make enough plays. Again, they haven't played anybody who has the kind of balance that we do either. Right. I mean, if they bring everybody up and let us to run, I think Sean and them could throw the ball on them. So
yeah.
I think, yeah, their defense is really good, but they haven't played anybody who's playing like us. And the other thing I think is Auburn has on both sides of the line, Auburn wears other teams down. The other thing that happened, I forgot to say in the Ole Miss game, is we kept rotating guys in on the defensive line, and right. normally like the offensive line of a team wears down the other team's defensive line. But in that game, our defensive line wore down their offensive line.
Absolutely.
Like we kept substituting, and in the second half, our guys were fresher, and I think their offensive linemen, they had run so many plays, I think their offensive linemen were exhausted. And we were running by him and pushing him around. So.
When Lawson finally got the sack after chasing Kelly around all game, when he finally got the sack, he grabbed him around the waist, spun him around, lifted him up, picked him up, and threw him down. I thought he was going to dig a hole, bury him, and put a little tombstone. It's just like, I got you, finally. We're going to put you down. This was funny. I saw somebody mention this on Twitter today that they said they were trying to put together an all-star Eastern division defense to play Alabama. In other words, no Eastern team by itself could play Alabama, but if you put together like an all-star team on defense, and he's like, it wasn't worth trying because it basically was Florida plus a couple of Vandy guys.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty good.
Makes sense.
Let's see. We need to talk about for a second about Lorindo and our other two books. We haven't given enough airtime to those. You know, bear in mind now it is Halloween as we're recording this, so November will be having sprung by the time you're probably listening to this, and you need those Christmas gifts for the loved ones in the Auburn family. And, you know, you can always get Season of Our Dreams, which lets you recount the glorious 2010 season in loving detail week to week. And, of course, if you want to look back at 30 years of Auburn glory, you can get Decades of Dominance. But I think we've firmly established now, though you always get new listeners all the time. So if you're a new listener and you don't know about this, John's dad wrote the definitive biography of Auburn's great offensive coordinator under Shug Jordan for many years, Lorindo. And it's not just about football. It's about all the amazing things that he did in his life. He excelled in every sport he played. He fought in World War II. He was in Tokyo Bay at the surrender of Japan. I mean, there's just so much amazing stuff in it. It's just a fun, fun read. Everybody that reads it loves it. So go to Amazon.com. If you want to get a signed copy, there's still time, a little bit of time before Christmas. Contact us directly. Send an email, auwishbone@gmail.com, or get it to us on Twitter, and we'll see if we can't rustle you up a signed copy through the mail for probably the price you'd pay retail, you know, on Amazon or something. We'll see what we can do about that. So, but yeah, be sure to check that out. John, is it time for Mira to give the intro?
It is.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Still got to iron out the sound of the audio. I'll redo my little rig here without Scotch tape when I get more time. So what do we got tonight?
I think you should retape it live on the air.
I've already done it a couple of times. It's looks pretty horrible.
Our first question comes from G Diddy 01, who says, "My friends were critical of Auburn's quarterback play Saturday night." He says, "I don't get the criticism. White isn't Kelly, but he was good. What do you think?"
He had a higher quarterback rating than Kelly did.
Yeah, I thought Sean White had a really, really good game, and mm-hmm. it's also just different what the team needs.
Right.
I mean, Kelly needed to be everything for them, and Sean right. White doesn't need to be everything, but he's very efficient at what he does, and I thought he had a great game.
And the one thing he's still trying to do is hook up on those longer passes, you know.
Mm-hmm. We've got to do a bit better on that. That was a touchdown that we missed there.
Yeah, we've had some guys open. We got to get the ball to them is all. But other than that, intermediate, short to intermediate, though, he is as good as there is.
Well, and the other question, the other side of this question is from Killer McCoy, who asked, "Do you think Auburn has found a quarterback like David Green of UGA fame? Nothing spectacular, but efficient and consistent."
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, every week it seems more and more like we're going to have two more years of Sean as the man. which is interesting because we got some really talented people that are going to be sitting on the bench over the next 2 or 3 years. And I'm not complaining. Yep. I mean, if he's just a winner and he gets it done, great. But I'm just saying it's going to be interesting because you're going to have some real studliness sitting there on the bench. We'll see.
All right. Next question comes Emily Rios, who says, can you explain what happened with our D? What was the main adjustment that made the difference?
Well, I would say go into the zone, right? And the cover two, right? That's about as deep as I can get.
Well, Auburn all season long has played a lot of man-to-man defense. That's where this, one receiver, it's like basketball. It's your guy. You go wherever he goes, and you stay on him. And, when the Ole Miss was taking advantage of that a little bit. When you play man-to-man, you turn your back on the quarterback and kind of run with the receiver. When you play zone, you have the ability, you're covering your area, you could face the quarterback a little bit more because you know there's somebody who's covering the zone behind you. You don't have to worry about the ball going over your head so much. So I think that helped. And I think the defensive line, they changed some things they were doing. And I think we got a little more pressure on Kelly the second half, and that made a big difference too.
Yeah.
Josh Corbett asked, do you see Auburn winning the remaining four games and making it to Atlanta and potentially the college football playoffs?
Okay, well, here's the thing. Even if by some bizarre twist of time and space we actually do finish 10-2, and then we go to Atlanta and dispose of Kentucky or whoever they throw up, literally into the SEC championship game in the East.
We're still
an 11-2 team, and I know we're an 11-2 SEC champion. But with four teams currently undefeated, I just don't see them leaving out an undefeated Power Five conference champion. Let's just say they don't lose. I mean, probably one of them's going to lose before the season's over. But let's just say they don't. Okay, I can't see them taking an 11-2 team, regardless of what conference they won, over an undefeated team.
But in this scenario, we would have beaten Alabama, so they wouldn't be undefeated.
Yeah, you're right.
Michigan could come out of the Big Ten in your scenario. Washington could come out of the Pac-12. So there'd be only two undefeated, and Clemson.
Yeah.
So there could be three undefeated teams in your scenario, and then in one spot left.
And then you're looking at like an 11-1 Louisville, an 11-1 Alabama.
Yes. And maybe, the SEC champion.
Maybe an 11-1 Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
How weird it would be if you had an 11-2 Auburn SEC champion, but two other SEC West teams 11-1. Same number of wins, fewer losses. And one of them beat us head-to-head. It gets kind of – well, no, A&M would have to have lost for us to have been in the SEC championship game. Everything is predicated. We don't control our own destiny. We still need A&M to lose. But they have to play LSU.
If the easiest pass for us to get there is for LSU to lose. For A&M to lose. And I think the easy – thing for us to cheer for, obviously, is for Alabama to lose every game, like for Alabama to lose this weekend at LSU.
Yes. God, yes.
And but also for LSU, A&M to lose. A&M starts to play LSU, A&M starts to play Ole Miss. So A&M could lose a game, and then it comes down to just head-to-head with us in Alabama. If it's a three-way tie, it's not automatic.
No.
It comes down to literally like the records of the teams we play in the East, honestly.
And we'll be the lowest.
So, but I think there's a long way from that being over. So, but it doesn't favor us, particular thing, I don't think. So, the best case scenario is, A&M losing. And the best case scenario would be honestly, Alabama lose this weekend and A&M lose, to LSU or Ole Miss. And then we'll be in a position where if we win the Iron Bowl, we're going and there's nothing anybody can do about it. The other thing I would say is that, it's not playoff or bust for this team.
No, no.
And I think people need to look at it and go, if we don't make the playoff, the season's a failure or something.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy.
I think people get caught. I mean, and the rankings come out tomorrow night, and I'm sure Auburn is going to be like 7th or something in the I think they only got two losses, and who we lost to, you know, two pretty good teams. And it's who, it's also who have you beaten? And we beat LSU, who's good. You know, we beat Ole Miss, who's not bad. We beat Arkansas, who's not bad. So I think the committee looks at who have you beaten and who have you lost to, and they don't penalize you for losing to really good teams. They look at who have you beaten.
I think we'll be about ninth. I thought we should have been ahead of Nebraska and Wisconsin in this poll, but we're behind them both. So.
Well, but again, the committee rankings come out tomorrow. That's the only one that matters.
I know. I'm just saying. I think we're going to be no better than ninth in the committee this week. We'll go up, but this week.
And again, I'm not worried about the playoff thing. If it happens, it kind of one of those things that take care of itself. There's a whole bunch of other teams that got to lose, and we got to keep winning and stuff. I think this Auburn team can, until we get to Alabama, I think we can beat everybody in our schedule. I think we have a good chance to beat Alabama. I think it's realistic. It's not at the beginning of the year. It was two or three games in, it seemed like a million to one shot, but now it's not. I mean, now Auburn's win percentage in that game is like 40%. So
I'll believe it when I see it, but yeah. Okay.
But so Auburn has a fighting chance in that game. Okay.
I would be perfectly happy to beat Alabama, win the SEC championship game, and go to like the Sugar Bowl. Now, yes. They currently have us, the predictors, the last I saw, have us going to a New Year's Bowl, one of the big ones, not the Sugar.
The Cotton.
Yeah, the Cotton, and playing that Western Michigan or whatever. I mean, come on. I mean, it's pretty much a guaranteed win, but I don't want to go play them. I want to play somebody.
No, I don't want to play them. But they're like the group of five thing where everybody thought that was going to be Houston all year, but Houston's dropped off. And then people, everybody thought it was going to be Boise.
Yeah,
so Western Michigan may be the highest ranked of that thing. But the Sugar Bowl is another real possibility. Like if one of the SEC teams goes to the playoff, then I think the Sugar Bowl is a real possibility. For even if Auburn loses to Alabama, I think it's a real possibility. We could go to the Sugar Bowl and play Oklahoma or somebody, and that would be great. That would be really fun.
I think you'd have an A&M going. We'd have three losses at that point.
So, I think there's there's a lot of good bowl possibilities out there. I don't want to get hung up about the playoff thing. So.
Playoffs? What talk about? Playoffs? You kidding me?
I'm sorry.
Playoffs?
I ran it, and we got more questions here. Carmelo says, how do we beat Bama? Aren't Auburn and LSU pretty comparable these days? Do they give us a do and don't do blueprint this weekend?
Maybe so. Yeah, maybe so. I don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence right now.
You know what? I'm feeling pretty good about LSU. I want to tell you why, okay? Everybody thinks, I've seen this movie before. I know what happens here. Same old thing. They run Leonard Fournette in there, and he gets 10 yards total, and Alabama destroys him. But that was Les Miles. That was the Les Miles show, and this is not. This is the Ed Orgeron show. And I can tell you that think about it this way. You're Ed Orgeron. If you win this game, you get the LSU job. And they'll be paying you $5 million a year for the next 10 years to coach LSU, your dream job, okay? And all you got to do is win this one football game. Are you going to play it close to the vest?
No.
No.
You're going to let it fly, boy. You are going to
fire that team up. He's going to freaking rip his shirt off in the locker room before the game and fire that team up. And he's also not going to be conservative. It's not going to be an I formation, run Leonard Fournette into the line 50 times. He's going to let it all hang out. And if he's got to take chances, fake punts or go for a fourth down or onside kick or whatever else to beat Alabama, they're going to do it. If they got to go spread offense and, put both running backs in the game or whatever, they're going to do it. So I think – I think this isn't going to be a replay of last year's game. And it's going to be in Baton Rouge at night, and it's going to be a lot of drinking. I just think defensively, I think they can really hold down Alabama.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I think I'm not saying it's a guaranteed thing, but I think they have a realistic shot. And like this guy said, I think we'll learn some things from them that'll work and won't work. Wardam Wade has a good question that we kind of just talked about. How can we find the middle ground as fans between Fire Gus and Are We National Championship Bound?
There is no middle ground. That's Auburn. We are a dichotomy. We are an on-off switch. We are a one and a zero. That is what I've ranted about for how many years now. That's who we are. It's our. We just have to embrace it, right? We're just crazy. We're just like, oh, Malzahn, he sucks. He's coach of the year, baby. Woo! That's who we are.
He came out on a coach of the year watch list today.
I saw that.
I would tell you, I would tell Wardam Wade and other Auburn fans,
yes,
the way to embrace the middle ground is just enjoy it week by week.
Absolutely.
Like, this team is playing really well and they're fun to watch. Just enjoy it.
John, that's absolutely great advice. And you know what else? What have I not been doing enough of this season?
I don't know. Tweet?
I have not been giving myself enough credit. You know it. I know it. Our listeners know it. The American people know it. I have not been giving myself the credit I deserve.
You haven't. You were all on the Petway thing a long time ago. I was skeptical.
I was on the pet bandwagon. I was on the Petway 18-wheeler semi-tractor trailer, and I was on the Gus bus. Okay, my garage, there's two vehicles out here in my metaphorical garage, John. There's two vehicles that are sitting out there gassed up and running right now. The Petway semi-trailer tractor and the Gus bus. Thank you very much.
All right, I got some related questions here.
All right, fire it up.
James Jones says, would you rather poke a grizzly bear or try to tackle Cameron Petway?
I just got the name for this episode, by the way.
Auburn Tweep says, how is Rock Thomas ahead of Kerryon Johnson, Peyton Barber, Javon Robinson, and Petway to start 2015?
If I understood our running back evaluations over the years, I'd be on the staff, and some people that are on it wouldn't be. I don't know.
All right, and he says, is there a more whiny, sore loser in football than Jimbo Fisher?
Oh, God. Here's the thing. Jimbo went to the Terry Bowden school of run your mouth, okay? And, of course, Dabo went to, I mean, I know he's from the Saban tree, but I think he was taking private lessons at night off the books from Terry, too. And those two just, wah. Dabo and Jimbo and all the other Marx brothers, right?
All right.
Harpo. They all need to be more like Harpo. They need to be less like Dabo and Jimbo and more like Harpo. How's that?
Okay, thank you. Logan Chilton says, if the Sandboard isn't running this week in honor of Petway's running, I'll be very disappointed.
What are you? Some kind of doomsday machine, boy.
There you go.
Matt Morton says, given the secondary struggles, do you foresee any of Auburn's future opponents being able to capitalize on that, or is that just a really good QB making really good plays?
Yeah, you already addressed that. I think you're right. Okay. That was a one-off, hopefully.
Wynn Carroll says, on Saturday, I saw flashes of Alex Smith in Sean White's performance. Is this an accurate comparison, or is there another QB he mirrors? I liked the David Green comparison.
Yeah, I never really played.
You know,
I
not
really
a big guy. What were you going to say?
I said I never really saw Alex Smith play.
I mean, yeah, Alex Smith went to Utah and he plays the NFL. Like he's a much bigger guy and he gets some of that more straight ahead kind of wing tee stuff. You know, the Urban Meyer pre Tebow, he was that guy.
Yeah. No, that's not Sean.
No, Sean. I like the David Green comparison. Georgia, you know, really good, like a bootleg kind of throwing the ball down the field and accurate, but also he's got that kind of toughness and the leadership quality that I think really rubs off on the team.
What about Eric
Zimmer? So I like that.
You hear me?
Yeah.
A little bit of him?
Who'd you say?
Eric Zier.
Yes. Yeah. I could see that.
Shorter guy, but good passer, tough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, Zier threw for 1,000,000 yards there. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I could see that.
Two Georgia guys. How about that?
Carl Von Drucker says, can a 10-2 Auburn team overcome that horseshit versus Clemson and get in the playoff?
I say no. It would take extraordinary circumstances. But then in 2013, who'd have thought Michigan State would beat Ohio State at the end of the season like that too? So, but I just think that the playoffs, that's getting on laughing gas at this point. Let's just worry about
beating the teams in front of us.
I'm more worried about.
Don't get caught. Like, I'm not even going to watch the playoff ranking show.
Yeah,
I got other things to do. So
I'm more concerned.
Don't get caught up in that stuff.
Right. Exactly.
There's a couple of similar ones to the ones we've kind
of
already answered.
But
J. Christopher Hilton had another one. Among factors in Auburn's success, does less predictable play calling with Rhett Lashley seem to be one? And I would say absolutely.
Oh, Rhett's play calling has been – I think it's been the difference between the negative plays and all the positive plays.
Not just that, but I think he's gone back to that when something's working,
mm-hmm.
we're really, really use it and kind of run it. You know what I'm saying? Hey. Like they've gone back to some of that 2013 stuff where they have 4 or 5 plays that mm-hmm. they just kind of pound on the other team with. And this year, this week, they used a little more power and counter in the running game than we have in the other weeks. That's because Ole Miss's linebackers are pretty bad. But it's the same plays a lot of times with Pettway, and he just – you know, when something's working, a lot of offensive coordinators want to show you how smart they are by pulling out 5 more cute things.
Yeah.
And Rhett's like, it's working. We're going to keep hitting you with it. So,
And I like that 8 different receivers caught passes.
Yes.
You wouldn't have thought that, would you? Coming out of the game, you'd have thought, I guess maybe 2 or 3 receivers caught a handful of passes. But 8 different guys, and Eli Stove caught 5. But
Tony Stevens was hurt and didn't even play.
Didn't even play, and we had 8 receivers catch balls. And our other new freshman receivers didn't catch anything.
Uh-huh.
They're coming along. I mean, we see a different one every game, although Eli Stove seems to be the one that's kind of emerging now. But
I like him. He's explosive. Oh, yeah. I like him with the ball in his hands.
Yeah, you got to think that – who's the one with 3 names? I can't ever think of his name. Myers, whatever his name is.
Nate Craig Myers. Because he plays the same position as Tony Stevens, and Tony Stevens is out. Mm-hmm. He actually started the game and played a lot.
Hmm. Just didn't catch anything. Okay.
No.
Any other questions?
No, that's it.
All right. Let's zip on through this real quick before my wife murders me.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
So, Kentucky beat Missouri. Kentucky is in sole possession of 2nd place in the East. If Kentucky wins out...
Florida still has to play Arkansas and LSU on the road. If they lose both those games, Kentucky could win the East.
Good gosh. I'm saying we're looking at an Auburn-Kentucky SEC championship game potential scenario in as of November 1st. Who would have thought that?
In basketball?
Yeah, well.
That's like an SEC tournament final, I could see.
It is, yeah. I think we've done that before. The world's largest outdoor cocktail party, 24-10. Georgia, you better not beat us. That's all. You can't play like this all season and then turn up and play your best game against us. That is not acceptable.
It's rope-a-dope, man. They're setting us up.
They're like, we'll lose 9 games and then go in and beat Auburn. Oh,
we're playing
gosh.
The long con on Auburn.
Exactly. That's what I'm worried about, man.
No, because you know what? It's not a con. They're not good at football.
They're not.
And the downgrade from Rick to Kirby Smart is very apparent right now.
It sure is. The natives are restless. I had this conversation. We talked about this before. My Georgia buddy was saying, this was not supposed to be a rebuilding job. That we were expecting him to come in and do at least as well as Rick with the same and possibly better. I'm like, well, you're rebuilding. I hate to tell you.
Well, I think this team, that was an unrealistic expectation. I think if people thought that, it's because they thought that he was going to be dramatically better than Rick. I mean, they had a freaking freshman quarterback, mm-hmm. and they have like one returning guy in the front seven on defense. You don't win in the SEC without a bunch of experienced, talented guys on the front seven on defense. So the receivers are blah. Their offensive line's not very good. So I think that the idea that they were going to be – a lot of the idea they were going to be good was basically that the East was terrible, which is true. But they're not good.
Georgia's going to look back at the last decade, in a few years, and just kick themselves repeatedly in the rear end. Because it was there for them to dominate the entire decade, and they just didn't do it.
And they were already kicking themselves. So
it was there for them. They could have had a Auburn in the 80s run if they want, or Florida in the 90s run, and they just didn't do it. They did not seize the day. Okay, quickly, Tennessee went to South Carolina, and in the chicken coop, they lost, okay? And when Butch Jones exited the stadium, he walked right into a New Orleans funeral that was going on, and I have some audio from it, John. Here is Butch Jones walking outside South Carolina Stadium into a New Orleans funeral going on, and here's what we heard.
Whose funeral is it? Yours.
There it was. I know that was an elaborate setup, but I thought it could work. So there you go.
It's pretty good. That's from the James Bond movie. I recognize
it. Yes, it was. I have a few leftovers from our Bond films shows. Samford went to Mississippi State and actually played him a pretty good game. You go, Samford. I mean, well, of course, they are a big school from Palo Alto. Oh, wait, Samford. Dang, Mississippi State. That joke gets old. And then lastly, the Aggies got crushed by the Aggies, 52-10. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was A&M doing the crushing to New Mexico State. Coming up this week, we don't have a lot of great matchups, but we've got a good 11 o'clock. Well, define good. We have an interesting 11 o'clock game, which is us. We've got a pretty good, pretty interesting 2:30 game, Florida-Arkansas. And we've got a really interesting 6:30 whatever game. We've got a good game in every time slot, is what I'm saying. That's all I ever asked for.
And as the kind of the I think the Alabama LSU game is 8 Eastern, 7 Central. The Georgia Kentucky game starts before that. So I just think like the ability to flip over, and if Georgia was losing at Kentucky, and then you could like go online to the Georgia message boards. I'm just throwing that out there.
So A&M at Mississippi State, got to think A&M cruises, right? Mississippi State's folding it up for the year. Georgia Southern at Ole Miss. Georgia Southern's not having a good year, I don't think, right? Ole Miss is about to take out some frustration on a lesser team here. Florida at Arkansas would be interesting just because we'll see if Florida has any offense and if Arkansas has any defense after they're shellacking. They need to get back out and play some football, right? I mean,
I think Arkansas will give them a good game here. Florida's defense is really good, but I think Arkansas will give them a good game.
In the Who Gives a Crap Bowl, Missouri at South Carolina, the chickens are coming home to roost on everybody suddenly. I'm impressed with Muschamp. Tennessee Tech at Tennessee. Again, Tennessee's Novembers are always comical. And then, John, we get to Georgia at Kentucky.
My cold, dead hands.
I'm locking up the Wildcats.
You mean the SEC champion Kentucky Wildcats?
SEC East? Yes. The SEC East dominating Kentucky Wildcats are going to smack around Georgia, and they're going to tenderize them up a little bit for us, I hope.
That would be so great.
When Georgia's great running backs have like 30 yards against Florida, you got to think we can put the kibosh on them a little bit, right? Surely. I mean, they'll get more than 30 yards on us, but it's not going to be a lot more. It's not going to be 330.
Mm-mm.
No. And then lastly, Alabama at LSU. This game is so hard to predict because we know the old LSU, but this is like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Bow, Bow, Bow. And I don't know what to make of that latter entity.
I just think the LSU, Alabama LSU game in recent years has been defined by Les Miles' predictableness.
Yeah.
And I don't think Orgeron is going to fall into that trap.
All right. We'll see. Who do you think is going to win?
I mean, I think Alabama's probably going to win, but I think it's probably coin flip right now, 50-50. I think, again, Alabama has a true freshman quarterback, and he's going to go on the road and play at night in Baton Rouge. If LSU's defense stops the run and he has to make some big passes in that game,
that's true.
With the crowd going crazy,
that's true.
That's going to be interesting to watch. So,
well, you know, Van's rule is you got to show it to me or I'm picking against you. So I'm still going with Alabama. But I would dearly love to see LSU pull it out. All right, last thing. We already did our Lorindo update. The Southern Fighting this week they're going out to Colorado to play that service academy called the Air. The Air Fighting. So good luck to the Southern Fighting going up against Air. There was a Formula One race yesterday, John, and once again, just like the last week, Lewis Hamilton won, Nico Rosberg finished second. There's some drama for third. I'll spare the listeners. You can tune into if we ever do our final season-ending show about it. But it was a lot of fun. Is that just about it?
That is it.
I think we are out of here, man. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. All I can say at this point, John, is War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you?
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.